OU Israel presents.
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Chayei Sarah, also known as Chayei Sarah, and the Shabbat of Parshat Chayei Sarah, the one coming up, is known in Israel and elsewhere, I imagine, as Shabbat Chevron. Chevron and Kiryat Arba were originally one and the same. Kiryat Arba is another name for Hebron in the Bible, and vice versa. Today, Kiryat Arba refers to a city/town, settlement, whatever you want to call it, immediately to the east of Hebron. And the two terms apply slightly differently to the geographic location. Be that as it may, Chayei Sarah is associated with Hebron, and Hebron with Chayei Sarah. As we read in the very beginning of this week's Torah reading, Vatamat Sarah, Sarah died, Bekiryat Arba, hi Chevron be'eretz Kanaan, in Kiryat Arba, which is Chevron in the land of Kanaan, Vayavo Avraham lispod lisarah v'livkota, and Avram came to eulogize Sarah and to cry for her. Then comes the Torah portion about Avraham's purchase of Ma'arat HaMachpelah, Kiryat Arba, Chevron, and the environs, from Ephron among B'nai Chet. And this is a very important passage here because of our original claim to Chevron. I wrote in Torah Tidbits, the hard copy, that if anyone has a claim to Chevron besides the Jewish people, it would be B'nai Chet, the original Hittites, but they don't exist. And even they wouldn't have a claim, because the Torah testifies that it was in the full knowledge and sight of the people of Chet that the purchase was made. Ephron first offered a gift of a burial place for Sarah, and Avraham insisted on purchasing, and Chevron named his price, which our commentaries say was exorbitant, and he paid every penny, every silver piece, and the Torah says that Chevron became the property of Avraham Avinu. Vayokam Sede Ephron Asher B'machpelah Asher al pnei mamre hasadeh v'hamara asher bo v'chol ha'etz asher basadeh asher b'chol gvulo saviv. To whom did this come? Li Avraham l'mikna l'enei v'nei chet. To Avraham as a purchase in sight of b'nei chet, b'chol bo'ei sha'ar iro, all that came there. And then afterwards, the Torah tells us that Avram buried Sarah, his wife, in Ma'arat Sedeh HaMachpelah, which today we call Ma'arat HaMachpelah, which is Al Pnei Mamre, Hi Chevron, Be'eretz Kanaan. Vayokom HaSadeh V'Hame'ara Asher Bo Li Avraham La'achuzat Kaver Me'et B'nei Chet. The Torah repeats that this land became Avraham's. Not too far from the Israel Center is the intersection of where King George ends and Keren Hayesod begins, where Rehov Agron starts, where Ramban and Aza begin, sort of. That square or circle is called Kikar Paris, Paris Square. And it is a common location for protest groups, because they wave their signs at passing cars. It's a heavily traveled area. One of the more common protest groups to see in Kikar Paris are the Women in Black, who are a very left-wing movement in Israel. And their signs predominantly say, Die le Kibush, enough of occupation. Their intention, of course, is enough of Israeli occupation of Arab and Palestinian lands. And I believe it's important to stress that we too should join in the protest called Die le Kibush, end the occupation, in reference not to what other people perceive as Jewish occupation, because that's not what it is. It is Arab occupation of Jewish land, and I think we all should agree, enough occupation, and all of Eretz Yisrael should be recognized by the entire world, and certainly by the Jewish people, as the land of the Jewish people, all of Eretz Yisrael. But starting with Hebron, Yerushalayim, of course, Shechem, and lots and lots of other places. This is undisputedly Eretz Yisrael. It is not only the Jews who see it in what we call the Tanakh. It is the Christian world and many, many others in this world who accept the authenticity of the Bible, and that's where it is. On a side note on that, there's a story out of some commission, I think it was called the Peel Commission, in the 1920s, I might be getting my timing a little off here, where one of the Jewish representatives spoke and specifically read this portion of Chaye Sarah and said, this is our documentation that Hebron belongs to the Jewish people, to which he was answered by the head of the commission or another member of the commission, tell me, sir, do you keep Shabbat the way the Torah commands it? Meaning, don't go quoting me parts of Chaye Sarah if you're not willing to commit yourself to parts of Parshat Yitro, which says you're not allowed to do any manner of malacha on Shabbat. My response to that would be touche, and my response on a more serious note would be that, true, the Jewish people need to commit themselves to the entire Torah, but that at this moment is besides the point. My point is, if you believe that God created the world, because that's what the Torah says, then you believe that Hebron belongs to Avram Avinu, and you believe when the Torah says, Ki v'Yitzchak yikarei lecha zara, that it is through Yitzchak, not Yishmael, but through Yitzchak that you will pass your heritage, and that means spiritual heritage, and that means physical possessions as well, and that means land acquired as well, and there are verses that also support the fact that it went from Yitzchak to Yaakov and not to Esav, and from Yaakov through the Shvatim to all of Bnei Yisrael to the Jewish people. This is a much earlier claim than post-1929 when the Arabs rioted and killed many Jews in Hebron and drove many of them out of the city. That does not constitute a valid claim for territory. But let's take a step back and do our weekly Tehillim, chapter 130, Kuf Lamed, Shir HaMa'alot Mima'amakim Kraticha Adonai. Adonai Shema V'Koli Tihyena Aznecha Kashivot L'Kol Tachanunai. Imavonot Tishmor Yah Adonai Miya Amod. Ki emecha haslicha lema'an tivarei. Ki viti Adonai kiveta nafshi v'lidvaro hocholti. Nafshi l'Adonai mi shomerim laboker, shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achinu kol beit Yisrael hanatunim batzara uvashivya haomedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha hamakom yirachem aleihem viyotziyem mitzara lirvacha umeafela laora umishibud lageula hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv vinomar amen. You know that over the years of Torah Tidbits Audio, we every once in a while play a song to the words of Achinu Kol Beit Yisrael. It has been done by different artists and groups, and I would like now to play for you the latest version of Achinu that I have found from an album by Ralph Levitan called Ken Tihiyeh Lanu. That's the name of the album in one of the tracks. The track I refer to is Achinu Kol Beit Yisrael. It's a little bit long, but give it a listen. Remember what we're asking when we say to God, our brothers, the people of Israel, wherever they may be, who are in trouble, may God redeem them from darkness to light and from slavery to freedom, speedily in our time. Achinu Kol Beit Yisrael.
Yeah.
Torah reading of Chayei Sarah basically has one theme or a little combination of two or three themes, but they're all very, very much related. And that is that Avraham Avinu is now approaching his latest years. He will die soon. He needs to assure the continuity of his way of life and his message to the world, which becomes the Jewish people in the form of his descendants. And towards that end, it is very important to him to do his best to provide a suitable wife for his son Yitzchak. I don't know how much of the detail of this I'm going to be able to get into, but my point that I would like to bring across now is that it wasn't enough for Avraham to raise his son Yitzchak as the natural heir and the one who will carry on. It had to be together with a Rivka Imenu, just like it had to have been an Avraham Avinu with Sarah Imenu. In other words, and it will be a Yaakov Avinu with Rachel and Leah. The role of the Imahot, the matriarchs, the mothers of Israel, should never be underestimated in how significant it is to what we usually refer to as the Avram Yitzchak Yaakov line. And without taking away from the men, the women's role is extremely important. We had in last week's Torah reading the episode with Yishmael, where Sarah said, "Garesh et ha'ama hazot ve'et bina," get rid of this woman Hagar and her son Yishmael. Avraham hesitates. God says, "Listen to what Sarah tells you." Ki v'yitzchak yikarei l'chazara, because she's right. In order to have the proper continuity of your life to Yitzchak's, it has to be free of the potential negative influence of Yishmael. The Torah, by the way, seems to indicate, and commentaries bring this out, that Yishmael repented his ways in later life and died a righteous individual, and probably spent a good number of years in that state of tshuva as well. But the point is that it was Avraham and Sarah that together left their hometown and came to Eretz Yisrael and did all of the efforts to spread the word of one God to the people, Avraham to the men, Sarah to the women. But Sarah must be credited as being the matriarch of the Jewish people on a similar level to the way we view Avraham Avinu. And Avraham obviously knew that because he was extremely concerned with who Yitzchak would marry. So he sends Eliezer back to his own hometown, Avraham's, and he finds Rivka. And this was with a heavy helping hand from God. And this was also, as Rabbi Shalom Gold said in a shiur, and he told me yesterday that he's developing this even further for an upcoming shiur, that Devora, Meineket Rivka, the nursemaid of Rivka, who accompanied her from the house of Betuel and the house of Lavan back to Yitzchak, was originally trained and coached and inspired and educated by Avraham and Sarah. And when they came to Eretz Canaan, they purposely left her for that purpose, to raise Rivka from infancy as a person who would be worthy of becoming Rivka Imenu, becoming the wife of Yitzchak and one of the mothers of the Jewish people. It should not be underestimated. And when it comes to Rachel and Leah, we have it there too. We're coming up to the halftime break. Once the two halves are put together, it'll sound a little funny, but the first broadcast of this show does have a news update and a couple of commercials before the second half begins. So whether you are actually going to experience a break or not before my next words depends on when you're listening, but that's the story. Be right back. You are listening to Torah Tidbits Audio for Parshat Chayei Sarah. I found a good way to equalize those who listen when there is a break between the two halves and those who don't, by playing a song now. So for some it'll be a little bit longer break, for others a shorter break, but it won't seem so awkward to have already asked you to wait until I come back to finish up the thought before we move on to another. Got that? Whether you do or not, we're going back to Ralph Levitan's album, Kein Tehiyeh Lanu, this time for a Shabbat mood setter, yet another version of Shalom Aleichem. I hope you enjoy it. Right before halftime, I was talking about the significant role of our mothers of the Jewish people, that they are sort of not mentioned as often or focused on as the Avot, the fathers, but no less significant because of it. In general, the women, even though they are understated in Tanakh, you look at how many times the name Avraham appears in Torah, compare it with the name, number of times, the name Sarah. Similarly, Yitzchak and Rivka. Similarly, Yaakov and his wives. And any of those. But it does not mean that the woman's role was insignificant. There's a tremendous value. And in next week's Torah reading, Rivka and Yitzchak pick it up again, where they say, we are disgusted with the wives that Esav has taken for himself, and we will not have it that Yaakov should do the same, and therefore Yitzchak commands Yaakov to go back to his mother's hometown to find the proper bride for him, the proper wife who can become one of the mothers, or two of the mothers, of the Jewish people. Shifting gears, I think I've mentioned this in the past, but it's one of my favorite type of jokes. There's a whole genre of genie jokes, and within that, a subgenre of the kind where the person gets exactly what he wished for, but what he wished for was not what he thought he was wishing for, or at least can have different explanations. The story of the guy who owned a candy store in the old days, somewhere in Brooklyn probably, and very, very hard working, and one day he was cleaning up a storeroom and he found a lamp and he rubbed it and a genie came out and introduced himself and said, you've got one wish. You know, there are some genie jokes with three wishes and others with only one wish. And he said, you know, I've worked hard for many, many years, always by myself in the store, and I've never had a time to take a vacation and to have a good time. Genie said, how does 2 weeks in Florida with all the trimmings sound to you? Actually, I'm going to have to change that because he definitely has to have a second wish, so we'll make it into a three-wish joke. It doesn't matter. I already botched it. So the genie says, done. Not a problem. Anything else before you leave on your vacation? And the guy said, good idea, it'll give me a good opportunity to test you out anyway. Make me a malted. To which the genie responded, poof, you're a malted. Now, I believe that's one of the older genie jokes. I went onto the internet in hopes of finding a suitable alternative to tell you before I made my point with it. And most were not suitable for repetition on the airwaves, nor even would I repeat some of them to individuals privately. There probably are some nice clean ones out there someplace. I seem to remember them. But you get the point. He said, make me a malted. That had a specific meaning in his intention. The genie was legitimate in interpreting it the way a genie takes it, and he turned him into a malted instead. Why am I saying all of this? because we have a situation which the Gemara tells us on this week's Torah reading, that there were individuals in the Torah and in Tanakh who did not ask things of God properly, and yet some were answered favorably and others were not. The first example is Eliezer. Eliezer, the faithful servant of Avraham, takes 10 camels from his master, laden with riches, and he goes to Avraham's hometown to look for a suitable bride for Yitzchak. He gets there, and I'm describing this in my own way, a little editorializing, and doesn't have a clue as to how to go about it. But being a God-fearing person, as he must have developed from his years of service with Avraham, he turns to God and says, I am going to ask for a sign. The girl, I'll come to the spring, to the well, in the evening when the local people come to draw their water. The girl who approaches me and offers me water to drink and also to water my camels, she will be the one that God is sending for me to bring back to Yitzchak. The Torah tells us no sooner do the words leave his mouth or his heart, and Rivka comes out, and he says to her, can I have something to drink? And she says, sure, good sir, here's to drink, and I will also draw water for your camels. By the way, I did a search on the internet, and I found out that thirsty camels are capable of drinking up to 30 liters. We're talking more than 7 gallons of water within a period of 10 minutes. Furthermore, I discovered they don't store water in their humps. The humps have fat that is stored and able to sustain a camel for long periods of being without food. But where the water goes, I don't know. They drink a tremendous amount of water, 10 camels, do the arithmetic, and you'll see that it was no small offer for Rivka to make to draw water for the camels until they drank their fill. And that is pointed out as a remarkable act of chesed, kindness to a stranger. And that is one of the hallmarks of our matriarchs. Be that as it may, the Gemara says that Eliezer had no right to do that because he was relying on a sign. Now there's more. He says, the Gemara, and Rashi quotes it, could have gotten an unsuitable woman for Yitzchak based on this sign. There might have been someone else who would offer him to drink and to water the camels. On the other hand, commentators who say this was a good test of character doubt whether there'd be too many other people who are willing to do that, but you never know. And what Eliezer seems to be faulted for is immediately assuming that his request of God was answered, and he gave Rivka valuable jewelry as gifts, and then almost as an afterthought said, by the way, who are you? And she said that she was Rivka, the daughter of Betuel, from the house of Nachor, Milcah, brother and sister-in-law of Avraham Avinu. And then Eliezer knew that his sign worked. But the Gemara criticizes him for not asking properly, the equivalent of saying, make me a malted. And luckily, just to mix the joke with the actual story, not meaning any disrespect for it, but luckily in this case, he was rewarded with an actual, very tasty malted. Remember the old kind where they put the ingredients in the metal container and then put it into the under the zhusher, where the stick came down and really stirred it up, and you always got it served with a glass, and a glass of water as a chaser, and there was always more in the metal container than there was in the glass, so you had another half of a glass of malted, and for listeners of a certain age and from a certain part of the world, I hope I am bringing a nostalgic smile to their faces when I describe the old days of the malted. So it wouldn't have been a joke if the genie had made him an actual malted, but turning him into a malted made it the joke. In this case, the Gemara simply says Eliezer did not ask properly, but was given the proper answer nonetheless. So far, the criticism to what Eliezer did was he didn't ask properly. But it gets worse. Rambam says that if you're looking for an example of nichush, nichush is reliance on omens. The best example is that which Eliezer Eved Avraham did by giving that sign and acting upon it. Commentaries on the Rambam, chief among them the Raivad, say no, what Eliezer did was the Seder was okay, because it was a test of character, it was a test of kindness, and it was the kind of thing that not everyone would have done. Had Eliezer said, I need a sign, the first girl that will come, and she will be wearing a blue bandana around her neck, and green Crocs on her feet, she will be the one that I will take for Yitzchak. That would be a terrible violation of the prohibition, which according to Rambam applies to non-Jews as well as Jews, of the sin known as nichush, relying on omens. This enters into opens up a whole discussion, which we're not going to get into, on various occult arts. But relying on omens is something that a Jew is not allowed to do. It's contrary to the Torah's charge of Tamim Tihyeh Im Hashem Elokecha. Be straightforward and simple and honest with God. And we don't rely on these kind of things. So there is a school of thought that says Eliezer did, and he's criticized for it. And he is very lucky, so to speak, and so are we, that it was Rivka Imenu that this produced anyway. But the lesson that we should take for it is you don't rely on these kinds of miraculous help. You don't do what you're not supposed to do. It seems that had Eliezer at least said, maybe this is the one, excuse me, young lady, who are you and where are you from? Then finding out that she was from the family of Avraham Avinu would confirm the possibility that she was the one, then that might be okay. And in fact, the verses sort of bear that out. But only sort of. Let's take a look at them in the English translation of the Living Torah by Rav Aryeh Kaplan. The man stood there gaping at her, but he remains silent, waiting to determine for certain whether or not God had made his journey successful. When the camels had finished drinking, he took a gold ring weighing half a shekel and two gold bracelets weighing 10 gold shekels for her arms. "Whose daughter are you?" he asked. "If you would, tell me if there's a place in your father's house for us to spend the night." And then she replies, "I am the daughter of Betuel, son of Milcah, whom she bore to Nahor." She then said, "We have plenty of straw and fodder, as well as a place for people to spend the night." The man bowed low and prostrated himself to God and said, "Baruch Hashem, blessed is God, Lord of my master Abraham, who has not withdrawn the kindness and truth that he grants to my master. Here I am still on the road, and God has led me to the house of my master's close relatives," etc., etc. The difficult part of that is whether he actually gave her the jewelry before he found out who she was or not. And it seems that that is disputed by commentaries, who then also dispute the issue as to whether we are to criticize Eliezer for what he has done or not. Now, whether or not Eliezer did the right thing or not is debated, as I mentioned, but what we get out of it is a springboard to a study of what we're not allowed to do, and that means we're either not allowed to do the same thing Eliezer did, or we're not allowed to do the same thing that someone thought Eliezer did, but he really didn't. It doesn't change our attention that we pay to the topic of Nichush. And to lots of related topics as well. Just take an example of a horoscope. We are not supposed to consult horoscopes to determine how we behave. And therefore one should be cautious even to glance at the horoscope in a newspaper or a magazine, lest the person have something happen and say, "Oh, you know, I saw that in my horoscope," and begin consulting it. It's a very dangerous thing. But we'll leave that for now. It is interesting and I think significant to note that even though there are no mitzvot out of the 613 in Parshat Chaye Sarah, we still get a lot of things from it in a halachic kind of way. The attention that Avraham Avinu pays to the burial of Sarah and the eulogizing. And these are things that we learn from. The issues of marriage that come up, the consultation of Rivka before her mother and brothers would allow her to go with Eliezer, and has led to recognize an insistence that a woman needs to consent and can't be married against her will. And several other things. A very surprising development is the fact that the blessing that Lavan, who we do not hold in high esteem as a fine person in the Torah, blessed his sister in a blessing that is borrowed by us for our brides throughout Jewish history. Vayevorachu et Rivka vayomeru la achotenu at hayi l'alfei revava v'yirash zarech et sha'ar sonav. That's a blessing that's used today at Jewish weddings. Again, from the Living Torah, they blessed Rivka and said to her, "Our sister, grow into thousands of myriads, may your descendants inherit the gate of their foes." His commentary on that, by the way, Rav Aryeh Kaplan, is not inherit but conquer, and this is a blessing given to brides to this very day, even though it's a quote of Lavan. And add to the above that the Gemara tells us that Yitzchak established mincha, meaning prayer in the afternoon, and it's taken from a combination of verses, one of them being here in Parshat Chaye Sarah, Vayetze Yitzchak lasuach basadeh lifnot arev. Yitzchak went out into the field to commune with God, lifnot erev, before the evening. From there, we are taught, because the word sicha, lasuach basadeh, sicha, is associated with prayer elsewhere in Tanakh, that here it means that as well, and we attribute the prayer of mincha, the afternoon service, to Yitzchak. Interesting that our sages compliment the one who davens mincha. Of course, you're supposed to daven shacharit in Arvit also. But mincha is held in a special high regard because shacharit is part of your morning ritual, and arvit is part of your evening ritual. Mincha very often means interrupting the course of your day. For example, today, Thursday, the 20th of Cheshvan, which is the 1st of November, mincha had to be finished a little bit before 5 o'clock at the latest. Our sages recognize that it's a difficult time to pray, and they kept it short. Arvit is longer, shacharit is much longer, and happy is the person, fortunate is the person who davens mincha. Keep that in mind, and on that note, I wish you a Shabbat Shalom, Lehishtameah.